Good morning, everyone. I call this meeting of the House Veteran and Military Affairs Division for February 18th, 2026 to order. We have a quorum here. Co-chair Bliss, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we move further, I would like to welcome our new vice chair, Representative Carrie Raybauer, who will be taking the role on the DFL side as the vice co-chair of the committee. As you all know, former representative Amanda Hemmingsen-Yeager is now in the Senate, and so, you know, boo, but we're very happy to have Representative Raybauer to be here to lead us in this work. And so welcome back, Representative Raybauer, and members, welcome to all of you and the staff back to the committee. The first item on our agendas is approval of minutes. Vice Chair Raybauer, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for April 9th, 2025?
So moved.
So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries. The minutes are approved. So folks, before we begin today's hearings and receive the SU Task Force report, I'd like to just take a moment to speak from the heart. After the last election cycle, I received a phone call from Melissa Hortman. She called me to asked me to take the responsibility of gaveling the Veterans and Military Affairs Committee and to see this work through. And I'll be honest, I hesitated because I'm not a veteran. This committee was in my traditional policy lane, and I wonder if I was the right person to lead this work. But Melissa reminded me of something powerful, and she reminded me that I am the son of refugee immigrants, that my family story, shaped by war, displacement, and sacrifice in service, that she told me that if anyone who was going to help move justice forward for Hmong and Lao veterans, especially our SGU veterans, it had to be someone who carried that history personally. She saw something in me that I didn't see yet in myself, and that was Melissa. She didn't just lead, she lifted people up. She didn't just pass bills, she built people. She didn't just open doors, she trusted others to walk through them. And because of her belief in me, I accepted this gavel. And every day I try to lead this committee in a way that honors her faith, her values, and her legacy. And so before I continue, I'd also like to welcome a new member to our committee. We're honored to be joined by Representative XP Lee, who recently won a special election last fall to succeed Speaker Hortman. As most of you know, Representative XP Lee is a refugee, born in a refugee camp. His life is directly connected to the very war fought by our SGU veterans. His family's journey is part of the story we're here today to honor. And so in many ways, his presence on this committee represents the living legacy of that sacrifice. And so I'm going to invite Representative Lee to briefly introduce yourself, because I think it's important for this committee and the public to hear your story directly. So, Representative Lee.
Thank you so much, Chair Xiong. I'm so happy to be here. Yes, you may have heard during my campaign, I'm just for city council and for state, introduce myself as a refugee. So my parents fled. Fortunately, my dad was familiar with the city of Vientiane, which is across the river. So he was able to negotiate movement over. There's a bridge there. Now I think it's called the Friendship Bridge between the two countries. But my dad came over. My mother came over. And then they met, and they had me in Nong Cai, refugee camp. So that was in 1978. And then we came over a year later. Now, you know, I'm here at the Capitol. And one of my lines I shared with folks is that, you know, from the dirt floors, right, of a refugee camp to the marble halls of the Minnesota State Capitol. What a journey, right? From the Mississippi, from the Mekong River to the mighty Mississippi, right? It's how my life has flowed. And I am honored to be here and to be able to represent the residents of 34B and to continue to work, hopefully together with everyone, to be able to make our lives better for all Minnesotans. So thank you for a little bit of time, Treshon.
Thank you, Representative Lee. We are grateful to have you here. Folks, last year together we passed the SGU legislation, and that didn't happen by accident. It happened because veterans and families never gave up, because this committee chose to listen, learn, and act, and because Melissa believed in the work, that this work mattered. Today is the next chapter of that journey. And so today we are going to be hearing from a task force about what progress has been made and still needs to be done. And we're continuing the work of honoring those who fought in a secret war that was kept a secret war for too long. It's about dignity, it's about recognition, and it's about keeping our promise. And so I carry Melissa's voice with me in this role. I carry her courage, her compassion, her insistence that we always do what is right, even when it's hard. And I'm grateful for the trust you place in me. I'm grateful for this committee, and most of all, I'm grateful for our veterans and families who never stop believing that justice is possible. With that, I look forward to hearing from the task force this morning. On our agenda is the SCU task force finding and legislative recommendations. So I believe we have Ben Johnson from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs to testify. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourselves for the record, and you may proceed with your testimony.
Jesus. Good morning, chairs, members. My name is Ben Johnson. I am Deputy Commissioner of Programs and Services for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. With me this morning is our Director of Government Affairs, John Kelly. Here today to update you on the creation of a new state statute recognizing veterans of the secret war in Laos. Minnesota Laws 2025 Chapter 30 created this new section, coded 197.448, in recognition of the service of those who participated alongside American forces in Vietnam out of Laos. Some of the specific veterans eligible veterans benefits included in this law are the designation of veteran on Minnesota driver's license and Minnesota ID cards. Honor Guards from congressionally chartered veteran service organizations may be reimbursed by MDVA for providing services at the funeral of a deceased veteran. Burial privileges at state veteran cemeteries for eligible veterans. Grave markers purchased by MDVA and distributed through our partners in the county veteran service offices or veteran service organizations. Veterans preference in hiring and promotion for public employment. Permissive preference applies to non-public employment. Free copies of vital records for veterans, surviving spouse, or next of kin. Some limited exemptions for expiration dates on renewal of professional licenses, motor vehicle registration and driver's licenses, and eligibility for the Honor and Remember flag. Under the law passed last year, Minnesota residents who were naturalized under the federal Hmong Veterans Naturalization Act of 2000 became eligible for these benefits effective August 1st of last year. For those who did not qualify under that specific criteria, the law directed the creation of a Veterans of the Special Guerrilla Units and Irregular Forces in Laos Task Force. We were charged with developing recommendations for you all regarding eligibility criteria and verification protocols to determine veteran status for individuals who claim to have served but were not immediately eligible under the Naturalization Act of 2000. Recommendations were delivered in a report to the chairs of this committee on February 10th of 2026. I'd like to walk you through the task force and its charter, the members, and the work that was done. So as developed by, I think it was Vice Chair Bliss, came up with a list of individuals that he thought would be representative of the folks that we wanted to ensure had some say in how this task force was composed, along with Chair Zhang's input and former Representative Herr, worked with Representative Cha, Senator Howe, Senator Pa, and Representative Duran to put together this group of legislators and individuals from the community. Rather than reading the specific distinctions, I'm just going to call the names out because I think for the record it's worth recognizing the participation of those individuals. So as I mentioned, I am Deputy Commissioner Ben Johnson. I was the commissioner's designee for this and ended up as the vice chair of the task force. Mr. Trent Dilks was a representative from the Minnesota Commanders Task Force. Mr. Tu Yang, Mr. Jia Li, Mr. Tong Vang, Mr. Bill Straczynski, Mr. Scott Walker, Mr. William Rulo, Mr. Tim Kirk, Representative Cha, Representative Duran, Senator Howe, and Senator Pa, who was the chair of this committee, came together over the course of 3 months to meet and discuss the protocols and develop the conversations, have conversations to develop some recommendations for the legislature to consider. As you can see, starting in September and running through just this last month, we met 8 times. We developed these eligibility criteria and considerations, discussed verification protocols. We brought in outside subject matter experts and on the task force and included in the communication from the community, we had veterans of the secret war in Laos and the Federal and National Cemetery Administration participating. So before we started the task force activities, our internal review of the legislation identified 4 areas that should be updated in any bill that is passed this session or in any session. Those include the inclusion of a burial fee reference in 197.236 subdivision A, updates to the veterans preference benefits. Rather than reading each of these individually, I'm happy to answer specific questions about the need for these changes, and I can come back and update as well once you've had a chance to review the task force report. Remove reference to the renewal of professional license motor vehicle registration. Those apply only to persons who have recently separated or recently been discharged from active military service. And then finally, the honor and remember flag is a flag that is eligible to be flown over public buildings. It is not something that the MDVA offers. It is available for anyone to purchase and fly it as they would like. So we would ask to be having that 197.987 removed. So the meat and potatoes here, protocol and eligibility. For state benefits and privileges, what we attempted to do was establish procedures for determining that eligibility. Eligibility for these benefits requires applicants to pre-file for burial with the National Cemetery Administration. The federal VA has a process that they can evaluate the history of an individual to determine if they were naturalized under the laws of 2000 as updated at any point. There were, I think, 3 NDAAs affecting the 2000 naturalization law to incorporate additional eligibility. But the first step for our recommendation is to pre-file for burial so that the NCA can evaluate the eligibility of individuals. We will work with the Minnesota County Veteran Service Officers and assist applicants in completing the form requesting that eligibility evaluation, that pre-filing. After they determine, the NCA determines eligibility, they would provide, the individual applicant would provide a copy of that determination to us. MDVA would verify that and issue the applicant a certificate qualifying them for state veterans benefits. Special consideration is the second step in this. This is where an individual who has applied for the NCA for pre-filing for burial, if they do not receive a positive determination from the NCA, they may request a special consideration from Commissioner Brad Lindsay or the oncoming commissioners, and submit a packet of forms and documentation outlined in some later slides. We are then in a position to evaluate, those documents and make a determination on eligibility, either to grant eligibility or deny eligibility. There's further law that allows for a denial to be submitted for contested case hearing to determine to challenge that determination. So we have multiple opportunities for an individual to pursue this eligibility criteria, at least 3 different steps. Final determination, we would recommend that this be available to members of the community until December 31st of 2030. Mm-hmm.
Chair, members, for the record, John Kelly, Director of Government Affairs, MDVA. So just to put a kind of simple kind of through line process on how that we set, an SGU applicant has basically four opportunities to be deemed eligible. They can apply to the they under the protocol that's part of the recommendations, and in the report it reads like a bill, is apply pre-file for burial with the NCA. Under the changes under the 2022 federal law that passed, that previously had only looked similar to our criteria one, SGU applicants that were naturalized under the 2000 law. Most Minnesota SGU applicants were naturalized prior to the year 2000, so they don't fall under that criteria. However, now there is a eligibility criteria from the Secretary of Veterans Affairs that says if they've served, deemed served honorably, and the same kind of proof, you know, affidavits, all the things that are listed in the protocol were presented to us by the National Cemetery Administration. So an applicant would submit that application. If they get a determination that they're good to go from the VA, they bring that to us. We issue the certificate of eligibility. If they need more information, they will get a denial, and then they will get told how to bring that up to par and then get that approval from the VA. Or they can go to the state. And so the second piece is the special consideration by the commissioner. We have a state process that, similar to the federal process, they can apply, and we would evaluate that eligibility criteria. And if that, so that's the third opportunity. And then fourth, they can appeal to the Court of Administrative Hearings. So they have four opportunities here to get into it. And when we heard from the NCA, they couldn't say with, you know, obviously they're going to hedge because they're the feds, but they said that they thought that a lot of these applications would be successful based on the criteria we have and based on the criteria that they have. We also heard from Ramsey County CVSO that is doing a lot of this work right now, and so the task force recommended the must on the support from our claims and field operations folks and the county veteran service officers. So again, we on this eligibility criteria, we feel like there's a fair, thorough kind of set of opportunities for an SGU applicant to receive this recognition. So just wanted to leave that out.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, members. So this is the final slide with information and our request to you in this committee and your counterparts in other committees through the process of this session. Any changes recommended or otherwise need to be enacted through this process and signed by the governor. Upon enactment of the law, veterans of the Secret War and Laos who meet those established criteria are eligible to access the identified benefits and privileges. We're ready to work with the legislature this year to help develop and provide any additional information, offer activities, feedback to support the development of these updates and changes. We do have a full list of information on our website. The link is at the bottom of this presentation, including recordings of all of the task force hearings. And it includes summaries and reports that were supplied by others in the communities, working to try and be as transparent and open as possible. If you or members of your communities, members of your districts are interested in hearing more about this and the work that was done, we've got records. We've got the ability to go back and talk through some of the challenges that we faced and some of the resolutions that we've offered. Again, happy to answer any specific questions now. Otherwise I am happy to, again, to be available at any point in the next, three months.
No, he's not counting.
I'm not counting. Certainly. Thanks, John.
Thank you so much. My only question is how and why do we have a deadline of December 31st, 2030?
But, Chair, Representative, the goal in this is to have some finality in terms of how we as an agency would be administering these. Our goal would be to get this information out to the community as quickly as possible, primarily the age of the eligible members plays a factor here, and the longer that we delay, the fewer that we're able to serve. So,
thank you. Any further questions, Mr. Chair, Chair Bliss?
Thank you. I just wanted to say thanks to you guys for putting up with the task force. I know sometimes they're not the most fun things to do, but it's nice to see that you came through with the deliverable in the right amount of time, and I'm very happy to see what you guys did and how you did it. So I really appreciate the effort, and thank you to the task force members. I know it was a big lift, so I really do appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rand, I know that you also put in a lot of work and effort in this. So I also want to thank you, too, but you're up next to speak. So, Representative Rand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just some clarification questions that I know that some of the public may have in the future, but what is, I guess, the difference, and can you explain this in a little bit more detail, on the federal guidelines for the establishment of this for the burial and then our statute? Are they pretty much the same? Is there any variation with that? Or there's been some in the process for the eligibility process here for the federal burial process, mm-hmm. and then our state statute. Is there any difference in there?
Mr. Johnson or Mr. Kelly?
Yeah. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. So what we're attempting to do is follow the federal process first. And adhere to the decisions made by the NCA based on their access to information that we as a state agency don't have access to. So in terms of that pre-application, the individual would submit that request. The NCA would evaluate all of the records that were submitted, would also get into the systems that they have access to at the federal level, and then make a determination. For the state of Minnesota, we would be relying on that initial evaluation for federal eligibility. So in this case, we're not saying that members who apply for pre-file for burial at the federal cemeteries would then have to use a federal cemetery. We're simply utilizing that process that already exists so we can evaluate eligibility for state veteran cemeteries in particular. And I will be blunt and say that if someone is not found eligible at the federal level, federal law prohibits us from interring someone in a state cemetery as well. So this does not expand eligibility to state cemeteries for those who are not eligible for federal burial. But the rest of the benefits that are included in the law are continued to be offered to those who are found, especially through the protocol of having the commissioner reevaluate.
Representative Ryan.
Thank you for that answer. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Also, there's a line in here for other relevant supporting documents. There's been some possible concerns about that, what that is. I just was looking at just verifying some of the information in regards to that line.
Certainly.
Mr. Johnson.
Chair, Representative. So the specific documents that are outlined in the report are taken from community feedback as well as components offered by the National Cemetery Administration's reps telling us the sorts of things that they were looking for. So we're looking for, in addition to actual formal documents, which we understand are hard to come by or don't exist at all, there are also opportunities to supply affidavits. There are opportunities to prove membership in a SGU veterans organization, which has its own vetting process. So we accept a multitude of documents to corroborate. And our goal is to ask people to send as much as possible in so that we can make the best decision with what they do have. The full list is, if you wanted to bring it up, we can. Otherwise, happy to try and answer specifics. I know you had a few questions about sort of the slippery slope in some of these areas, so I appreciate that.
Mr. Kelly?
Thank you, Chair. The H, which is the other relevant supporting documents line, is a, you know, as an agency that's going to be taking in these applications, and given the nature of the how these Americans came to the country, we wanted to not close the door on, you know, a specific item. There may be something that one individual happens to have that is paired with all of the other items that are on this list that is enough for the commissioner to make a determination. But we set forth a pretty specific list, and that was, as you recall, Representative, a request from the SGU community as well to have a specific list that's able to follow. So we anticipate that most of the applications, if not all the applications we receive, will follow the list of items rather than this catch-all kind of H that we have in there. I would also note that the NCA also we mirrored what they take, so we think the commissioner is going to be looking at essentially the same kinds of documents, so we feel confident in how we structured the special consideration list.
Representative Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I thank you for that answer. It clarifies a lot of things for me, and I think some of the people that might have some questions about that issue. I just want to make note that I had a really good time on this committee. It was very good learning about some of the history and looking into things and knowing, you know, how the MDVA works. And it's really nice to be able to see the different sides of things. And, you know, obviously this is my first term, so it's kind of opening up some doors that I've never really had open before. So it was really nice working with you guys, and I appreciate the process. I do know that Senator Paugh and Rep. Lee are going to be working on some language to refine this statute here. So hopefully we'll be getting that here shortly. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Rand. Any further discussion on a task force report? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. Just wondering, wanted to follow up on the deadline question earlier from Co-Chair Ray Ryer. Have y'all talked about the engagement process? Because you're, you know, hoping to get it done soon, and then, of course, then the, you know, would hate to have anyone miss that deadline, right? So have y'all thought about that, and how we can make sure we get everyone?
Yeah,
Mr. Johnson,
Chair, Representative. First, congratulations, welcome to the legislature. I'm happy to tell you that our communications team has already started work on developing outreach to the communities. I've had the good fortune of being on a St. Paul television show that was specifically talking about the secret war in Laos and these warriors and elders and heroes of the community. The goal is to continue to do that outreach, have it front-facing on our website, have that availability happening, use every platform that we have as an agency, count on the community that you represent through your representation to be doing that outreach as well. And we also will be working with County Veteran Service Officers and the Commander's Task Force, so the Veteran Service Organizations of the Commander's Task Force, to ensure that every stone is overturned to make sure that anyone who is interested in pursuing this is aware that it exists. I think that the big win will be once this passes, we will celebrate the passage of the updated language. And I think that will be an opportunity then to bring some attention to it in a very positive manner. So that's the answer that I have for you, sir.
Representative Lee? Done? Okay. Who? Oh, Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Chair. And I just want to note, we didn't pull this, you know, time-limited application process out of thin air. The Hmong Naturalization Act of 2000 also had a 3-year time frame. What we heard from our, you know, SGU representatives on the task force is a sense of urgency and a sense of we need to get this done, and that's what we're committed to. And we believe that, you know, with outreach both from the department and also from the leadership of the SGU community, that we want to just get this done and get these folks their benefits and get on with it. And also, given the age of this population, we felt like 3 years of doing it with enough outreach that we could kind of, as Ben said, kind of close the book on it. So we wanted to mirror as much as we could a federal process, and that's what we did when we put into the bill.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Any further discussions on the SGU task force? Okay, well, I just want to thank all the SGU veterans who have joined us this morning, too. So I just want to thank you, Mr. Johnson, Mr. Kelly, Representative Rand, and members, for all your hard work on this, and to our veterans. I just recognize them for their presence here today. Look forward to language being drafted and see where we can go and see this get to the finish line. So thank you very much, Mr. Johnson and Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Chair.
Next on the agenda is, oh, before we do the next agenda, my wife stayed up late last night to make a treat for everybody. And so it's been a tradition of her to make Rice Krispie treats. There's chocolate, too, but just the fact of the regular ones. And so if you want to grab some more later, help yourself. And you can thank my wife forcing me to stay up late with her to make the Rice Krispie treats. All right, next on the agenda is the update on the Minnesota Military and Veterans Museum. And so I believe we have Randall Dietrich, Executive Director of the Military and Veterans Museum here. Welcome to committee, sir. Please identify yourself for the record, and you may proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee. My name is Randall Dietrich. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Military and Veterans Museum at Camp Ripley. Happy to talk with you this morning, and always nice to follow a treat distributed to all of you to have my remarks follow your snack. So happy to be here this morning. I wanted to give you an update on what we've done together as a state to honor our veterans in Minnesota by the creation of a new museum. So in the way of a brief presentation and a few slides, I wanted to share some remarks with you.
Talk to you.
Thank you, Chair. Moving forward, just for, again, everybody's, you know, understanding and appreciation of the history of our museum, I do understand that the Minnesota Military Museum and Veterans Museum at Camp Ripley has been there for 50 years, serving veterans, their families, and the general public at Camp Ripley. We ran out of space at this modest museum long ago, especially the capacity of our team to share the stories and artifacts of the post 9/11 veterans in the state of Minnesota. And so our board of directors, represented here with Bill Struzinski and Nancy Haas and others, took upon the charge of creating a new facility and finding the means to create that space. And to support that, we reached out to a local landowner who donated 30 acres of land right outside the wall of Camp Ripley and next to Highway 371, which is an ideal location for our Veterans Museum, especially for those in the Twin Cities that make their annual trips to the Brainerd Lakes area to enjoy all that that has to offer. Now along the side of that road, Highway 371, as you'll see in a moment, is a new, soon to open, Veterans Museum dedicated to Minnesota's veterans. And so with that, we got underway with construction about a year ago. What you see on the screen is the south facade of this 40,000 square foot facility. And we've been mobilizing our team to make the necessary steps to open this museum yet this year. We've been moving some tanks and artillery pieces from Camp Ripley over to this new site right outside the wall of Camp Ripley along Highway 371, as shown here on this slide, and really been mobilizing folks statewide, veterans especially, to put together the necessary pieces to open this museum soon. Our museum is dedicated to telling stories from veterans of all 87 counties and all service branches. One way to underscore that commitment is to place and locate a submarine, Navy being well represented here. What you see is actually the conning tower or the sail of the USS Minneapolis-St. Paul submarine and the rudder at the rear. We, working with the governor's office about 5 years ago with the Bremerton, Washington, to recover the fragments of this sail. It had been cut up because the Navy had decommissioned it. We went out there with four low-boy tractor trailers, brought these pieces back that were all, again, cut up and admittedly quite rusty and looking nothing like you see on the screen. And we have done the work of restoring this submarine and then depicting it on the grounds of our new museum and doing the benefit to our visitors of displaying what the actual 360-foot-long length of a Los Angeles-class submarine, the USS Minneapolis-St. Paul, SSN 708, would actually look like as if it were emerging from the central prairie of Minnesota. And then our job, of course, at the museum is to have these artifacts, the tanks, the helicopters, the artillery pieces, the submarine, of course, animated and enlivened by veterans who actually served on these with these tanker crews. Captain Neil Rondor from Thief River Falls was captain of this specific submarine. He will be at our opening and at our museum throughout telling the stories of what it was like to serve aboard this submarine. Jim Palmer from Plymouth, Minnesota will be a docent at the new museum. He served aboard this specific submarine and was involved in the decommissioning of this vessel. So our job at the museum is to tell veteran stories, but these artifacts certainly grab your attention. And then our job is to make sure that we're attaching Minnesota experiences of men and women to these important parts of our military history. Here you see the entrance to our museum before the snow fell or flew last fall. Again, the architect, HGA Architect, is who's been designing all this work for us. Breitbach Construction has been doing the construction work for us over the years, and moving from getting the race to secure things and locate things outside of the building and enclose it before the snow did fall, what we've been doing now during the winter months is moving indoors and outfitting this 40,000 square foot facility with classroom spaces, with three theaters, with seven multimedia stations, with a classroom, and with this Vesey Memorial Hall that you see here. General John Vesey's 46-year military career is well documented. His service in World War II and in Vietnam and work with the SGU units is well documented. General John Vesey and his wife are remembered at the cemetery across the street from this facility. So the ability for us to have this commons area being developed, as you see under construction now, and three large display cases documenting the leadership and legacy of this Cold War soldier and statesman, I think will serve us all very, very well. Our objective is to have school groups come through the museum in large numbers. For sure, we're gonna draw plenty of traffic off of the highway when they see this new facility open, and then the ability for us to host veteran reunions, other conferences at this facility is a key driver for what motivates us to get this work done. But it's an exciting time, and I thank you for your support in making this happen. It is a public-private partnership that has gotten us to this point, about a $40 million effort in total on 30 acres in a 40,000 square foot facility, again dedicated to the men and women who have served the state of Minnesota, dating all the way back to the Civil War through that present day. So it's a large scope and an important story that we're endeavoring to tell. And again, I just really appreciate the support of many of you over the years to get us to this point. To wrap up, some gallery spaces within the museum itself. Again, galleries dedicated to all those major conflicts that Minnesotans have been asked to serve in. We're going to be representing all of those in this new space. And certainly, like I mentioned, a mobilized effort where there's dozens of examples of Minnesotans really across the state of Minnesota all working to bring these pieces together to open in the new museum. In this instance, we've been restoring a World War II glider trainer. That glider trainer, instructive, of course, for those pilots that did eventually fly into D-Day, would have been initially training on these glider trainers. We've restored one and we'll be suspending it from the ceiling in our World War II gallery, as well as other aircraft on the way, working with the Minnesota Air National Guard, looking to secure it and place a P-51 and an F-4 and an F-16 to complement that submarine out there, the Ward gun being restored to be moved inside the World War II gallery as well. And then this image and the next just being photographs taken just yesterday up at Camp Ripley, Little Falls, 2 hours north of here, which will be a great destination, I would argue, to open in September. So the idea is that we're going to work night and day to open this facility between now and September. For sure, we'll be notifying you of a whole series of opening events, an opening season, if you will, all coming up in September. Of this year does, you know, coincide with, you know, the 25th anniversary of 9/11 and the Minnesotans who have served with such distinction after that event. And so we're honored to have lots of stories from that post 9/11 experience shared on this anniversary date. Want veterans, National Guard members to come and find their stories within this museum. And as much as we say it is about the future, it's just as much about the future as it is about the past, because we want to pack this facility with those stories to enlighten and inform future leaders to do better and to be inspired by the leadership that Minnesota has rendered since the Civil War. Thanks very much. Happy to answer any questions or comments.
Thank you so much, Mr. Dietrich. And the restoration work is really remarkable. So thank you for everything you do. Is there anyone from the public who would like to testify? Is there any member discussion? Representative Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for your presentation and for your work. I had the opportunity this summer to visit the World War I Museum in Kansas City, and it is a remarkable museum, and it really, like it tells stories in really creative ways, and it also just has some sort of, I don't know how to say, like you walk over those poppies, there's just this way that they create a sense of, like, history in a very artistic way. But anyway, you answered the question I was going to ask towards the end, that you're not just sort of displaying artifacts, but also telling people stories and giving us an opportunity to think about how we can do better in the future and kind of the nature of armed conflict. So thank you so much. I'm really excited to visit in September.
Thank you, Representative Feist.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just want to say thank you for that presentation and also for your tour this summer. I was part of the team that came to Camp Ripley, and it was amazing, the whole experience, and you have done a wonderful job with this museum. I'm of the mind that if we don't take the time to learn from the past, it's difficult to navigate the future.
Sure.
And so part of that is our military history, and I can't wait for the grand opening, and it's going to be wonderful. It already is. So thanks for your hard work on this and for that tour as well.
Thank you.
Chair Bliss.
Thank you. I do drive by this twice a week, so I get to watch the progress. And I do want to remind people that there is vacation destinations north of the Brainerd Lakes area as well. So just putting that out there. I understand you have an email subscription we can log on to get updates. Would you care to share how to access that?
Yes, absolutely. You can visit our website, mnvetmuseum.org. You're immediately prompted upon opening our homepage to sign up for an e-newsletter to receive those updates. So visit our website, mnvetmuseum.org, and join our mailing list and get regular updates on our progress. Thank you.
Vice Chair Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the first phase of this operation here, we're creating a museum. It looks awesome. It looks fabulous. The purpose of a museum, you got to have the attention getters. You have to have the really cool tanks and the guns and the submarine, all that really awesome stuff to get the kids excited. Can you tell me about the second phase of this, where how are we going to further collect and accumulate the stories of our service members here in the state? How do we preserve it? How do we reach out and get it? Because for me, it's not, you know, I've seen the tanks, I've seen the guns, I've seen the planes, but the really niche stories, the little things about how, you know, one person makes a comment or you're reading an autobiography from someone and they just one sentence and you think to yourself, wow, that's a human right there and that's a human story. That one 11-word sentence just opens your mind to that these are real people and this is a real story and they suffered and how what's that look like into the future? It's not just about showing stuff. It's about collecting stuff and how we're doing that.
Thank you, Representative and Chair. Quick response. You know, our charge is to serve Minnesota veterans and their families statewide. So we have a new facility to open right in the heart of the state, right, where folks will come. But our job as a museum is to go out main streets across Minnesota and engage people there. Our museum wouldn't be possible without the support of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Minnesota Department of Military Affairs for short. Our Camp Ripley partnership is key. Other folks at the Minnesota State Historical Society, PBS stations and all are contributing content to what we're developing here. Our job at the museum absolutely is to give the autobiographical account of what the Minnesota experience was. So just briefly, a few things that we're doing that. with World War II and the ward from St. Paul, those 85 Naval Reservists aboard the ward the morning of December 7th, there is an immersive theater that you will step into and spend 6 minutes in, where you will hear around you the stories of those sailors on that morning and what that was like. So you're going to hear from them specifically about what their experience was. And then you're going to move to another part of the gallery and hear of the National Guard Gopher 06 flight, the C-130 that left Andrews Air Force Base the morning of September 11th, and hear their account, or of Tom Burnett aboard Flight 93 that crashed in Shanksville, or of Scott Wallace, who was in the North Tower of the World Trade Center. In this theater space, you're going to hear their stories specifically and kind of experience what they did. You're going to hear that and feel that gun go off, that ward gun. You're going to feel it. You're going to feel what it was like for Scott to be in the North Tower, and then understand those stories. So we're trying to humanize all of this with letting veterans lead their voices. Rarely will we use a voice that's not a veteran's voice to tell that story. So that is the leading element. That is the narrative arc is theirs to share with us.
That's great. Any more member discussion? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair, Co-Chair Ray Rauer. Just to follow up on that question a little bit, you know, we have a former, I mentioned this museum to a former council member of Brooklyn Park, and he mentioned that he was part of, like, the Army, like, construction team. Forgive me, I can't think of the right term, but he said that he had, this, like, a unique uniform that he could contribute. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in terms of, like, artifacts and these sort of things, would it just be your email, or is there, like, a specific contact information that you could share that, like, I could, you know, share with other folks, mm-hmm. and the public, where if they wanted to contribute some sort of artifact, sure. They could?
Yeah. Thank you, Representative and Chair. Yes, we do have a full-time curator, a full-time archivist, who are charged with accepting these items. There will be a collections area within the museum itself. Also, the museum is designed to be able to see in on those collections areas. By design, we talked about this in the tour for those of you that were part of it. Collections, so important. We're going to display as many of them as we can. We have 111 display cases being built in Minneapolis right now to display these artifacts. And even with that, there's not nearly enough cases and room to display all of them. So within the design of the building, even people, visitors, will be able to view, look in on our high density shelving system and all those artifacts on display. So folks are welcome to contact me, contact our museum. Again, our website has information about how to donate potentially an item. And again, we want to be the repository of those stories of General John Vesey and every other Minnesotan, and do the best job we can to honor the men and women who are in this room and those that came before us, and really excited about the opportunity to lead that effort with a team really dedicated to doing this. And again, can't say enough of the support that we've received specifically from, you know, the Minnesota National Guard and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. It is a partnership that's gotten us here, and contact us and we're happy to talk to you, anybody who has something to donate. Thanks for the question.
Seeing no further discussion, that is all of our agenda. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, February 25th, and with that, we are adjourned.